The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, as the campaign for the presidential election begins to heat up, the focus on the office often tends towards the domestic role of An Uachtaráin. However, since Sean T. O'Kelly became the first Irish president to undertake a state visit abroad, the office has frequently made an impact on the world stage. Reporter Simon Tierney has been investigating and he joins me now. Good morning, Simon.
Morning, Pat.
Tell us about that first visit by Sean T. O'Kelly. Where did he go?
Well, he was sent to the Vatican in 1959, perhaps an unsurprising choice for what was then, of course, a deeply Catholic country. But it was in many ways a disaster, Pat. He had a private audience with Pope Pius
the 11th.
And
the 10th? Was it the 11th?
Go
on.
But during the audience, he disclosed the pontiff's personal criticisms of the Soviet Union to the press. And he said, quote unquote, "His Holiness assured us that communism will be overcome and that this will happen during his pontificate." Now, the Vatican was outraged about this disclosure and they issued a formal censure to the Irish government because, of course, it had damaged the fragile relationship between the church and the USSR. So it was a major first lesson for Irish diplomacy, really.
Now, Sean T. O'Kelly also visited the United States.
Yeah, and he had much better luck during his visit to the US in the same year, actually, Pat. And it was De Valera, I suppose, who was then given a true homecoming a few years later to Washington, D.C. in 64 as Ireland's first American born president. Here he is being introduced by Lyndon Johnson before his address to a joint session of Congress.
A native son comes home. President Eamon de Valera of Ireland is welcomed to Washington by President and Mrs. Johnson as he arrives for a state visit.
This is the country of your birth, Mr. President. This will always be your home. You belong to us, Mr. President, just as in a very special way John F. Kennedy belonged to you. So this morning it gives me great pride and pleasure on behalf of all of the American people to welcome you home. We're glad that you're here.
I salute here in prospect the representative of Ireland who may be permitted to address you as I have been permitted and who will be able with full heart joyfully announce to you that our severed country has been reunited and that the last source of enmity between the British and Irish peoples has disappeared and that at last we can be truly friends.
At last we can be truly friends, says Dev, just before the troubles kicked off in Northern Ireland. Eamon de Valera addressing a joint session of Congress in 64. It was under Patrick Hillary's tenure, though, that the presidency really went international.
Yeah, Patrick Hillary was in the Oris from the late 70s right through until 1990. He really brought the ambassadorial aspect of the office to the fore, Pat, undertaking a total of 29 foreign trips from Japan to Tanzania. And he was well known for being the only president to play competitive sport while in office. He had a golf handicap of 7, the lowest of any head of state in the world at that time. But he was the first Irish president to visit Australia in May of 1986. Now, this was a colossal journey in those days, of course. Over 2 weeks, he visited every state in Australia. Here he is in Brisbane with RTE Television's Jim Fahey capturing the moment.
Here at Brisbane, about midway through their 5,000-mile tour, Dr. and Mrs. Hillary were welcomed by the Governor-General, Sir James Ramsay, and Lady Ramsay. Then it was on to a state luncheon and a meeting with one of Australia's most colourful and controversial premiers, Sir John Bielke-Peterson. Dr. Hillary, in his address, referred, as he has done on many occasions on this trip, to the extraordinary role which Irish men and women have played in the development of Australia.
The children of Ireland have left their mark on every state and territory, in Queensland no less than in any other part of this vast land. Irish names are to be found in the pages of the record of every endeavour and activity in this country.
Premier Bielke-Peterson also paid tribute to the early Irish settlers, but his attempt at an Irish joke seemed to backfire somewhat, and the kindest thing the Queensland media has had to say about it is that it was an unfortunate faux pas.
We know that they have a great fund of of stories, of jokes and so on. Thinking of that, I was thinking of the story of the Irish school in Ireland who wanted a guest speaker for an evening's speech night. And they wrote to the university saying they have a distinguished gentleman who could come and be their guest speaker who was a whip. They got back a reply saying that they were sorry they didn't have one man who was a wit, but they had two who were half-wits. Would that do? I don't know if that's a good story to tell.
But in these matters, good diplomacy prevails, and there wasn't a murmur of protest.
Not a murmur of protest. So that was Patrick Hillary's visit to Australia in 1988. Now, I'm curious about Mary Robinson's presidency with regard to making an impact on the world stage. Of course, she left office to become United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, where she surely made an impact. But how did she use the presidential office to focus international attention?
Yeah, well, this is of great interest to me, Pat, because hers is the earliest presidency that I properly remember. In 1992, she asked the government if she could visit Somalia, which was then in the grip of a famine in the wake of its civil war, and she became the first international leader to visit the country since the crisis, and she played a critical role in drawing attention to the plight of that country.
Now, at the end of her stay, something quite extraordinary happened during a press conference in a hotel in Nairobi before she flew back to Dublin. What happened?
Well, she'd spent a number of days meeting families who were affected by the famine, you know, children, desperate mothers, and she bore witness, essentially. And what was striking about the press conference that you mentioned, Pat, was that she spoke with unprecedented honesty, emotion, anger, even about this situation, and she broke down in front of the cameras. She said afterwards that she felt in the moment that she'd made a terrible mistake to speak in such a way as a head of state, I suppose, but then she soon realised that her speech had had a great impact around the world.
It has been a very difficult 3 days, very, very difficult. I found that when I was there in Baidoa and in Afkoi and in Mogadishu and this morning in Mandera, that I had no difficulty in remaining calm and in not letting my emotions show. And I'm sorry that I cannot be entirely calm speaking to you, because I have such a sense of what the world must take responsibility for. And by the world, I don't mean some distant sources. I mean each of us. Yes, the United Nations and other international agencies. Yes, governments and the collective governments such as the European Community. But all of us. I saw the images on television before I came, and I found them disturbing. I found that I was moved and even moved to tears once or twice when I saw the coverage by the Irish television media. It's much, much more difficult when you come here, because then it's not contained in a little box. You can't go away for a cup of coffee. You can't take a telephone call. What you've got to see, as we saw for the last 3 days, is unacceptable. I have an inner sense of justice. It has been offended by what I've seen in the last 3 days. Deeply offended.
And that was former President Mary Robinson speaking in Nairobi in 1992. Now, what's interesting about the role of the president is the idea of the private versus the public. While they're restricted very often in what they can say out loud, sometimes their private views can be put to the test on the international stage. So take us back to Mary McAleese in Boston, 1998. Take us back, Simon.
Yeah, well, this was fascinating, Pat, but also a shocking episode, I think, in Irish presidential history, and one that only came out later on. McAleese was on an official trip to the US when she visited Cardinal Bernard Law of Boston, an arch conservative. He took grave exception to her support for the ordination of women priests. Now, this was a position that she had articulated before becoming president, which is important. We'll hear McAleese recounting what happened during the episode to Gay Byrne now on The Meaning of Life back in 2012. But it's important to note, I think, that the Irish Church responded in defence of the president. They even rescinded an invitation for the Cardinal to visit Ireland because of how he'd behaved towards her. And Bernard Law would resign a number of years later over his role in the cover-up of child abuse.
The job was such that there were limits to where you could go and limits to what you could do and say, And I would never have had any business in the role of president using it to express my own private views. That never bothered me. In fact, the only time it really, really bothered me was when I had a most dreadful encounter with Cardinal Law of Boston, when he said that I was a very poor Catholic president. And I was very distressed.
He said that?
He did indeed, yes. And in front of an audience too. But he did, and I took him on, and I said to him, excuse me, I said, I'm not a Catholic president. I'm a president of Ireland. I'm a president of people who are Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, agnostic, Muslim, Orthodox, all sorts of people. I'm their president. And it happens that I am a Catholic. And I've tried my best to be a good Catholic. And I said, I really don't think it's any of your business to tell me whether I am or whether I'm not either a good Catholic or a good president. I don't think that's your business. And we had a very, really appalling discussion, to put it frankly.
No better woman, Mary McLeese, speaking to Gay Byrne in 2012. We know that presents have gone all across the world, as we've been hearing, but it took us a long time to finally get to the home of British democracy.
Yeah, it's extraordinary to think, Pat, that the first state visit by an Irish president to our friends across the water didn't take place until 78 years after the establishment of the office of Uachtaráin. Now, while the Queen's visit to President McAleese in 2011 is rightly remembered, I think, for being a groundbreaking moment in relations between Ireland and England, perhaps more attention needs to be given to the reciprocal visit by Michael Dee in 2014. The British laid on all the traditional pomp and ceremony to welcome him, travelling to Windsor Castle in a horse-drawn carriage and all the rest. But it was his speech to the Houses of Parliament which I think struck a chord, where he underlined the development of Anglo-Irish relations.
Well, he's also been very outspoken in recent times about Palestine and other matters. And I think since he's still in office, we'll wait for history to judge those comments and the impact they may have had. Simon Tierney, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.